What's up, nerds? Welcome to the Captain's Quarters, the unofficial Star Trek rewatch podcast where we are rewatching the entire Star Trek franchise. My name is Gabe, and I'm with my co-captain, Jason. Make it so, Jason.
Hey, buddy. How's it going? Happy Star Trek Day.
Happy Star Trek Day? Is that a thing?
Mm-hmm. It's a thing.
What is that? Just me and you?
Yeah, no. Today's September the 8th. It was September the 8th, 1966. Star Trek first premiered on television in the United States. So it's Star Trek Day today.
Wow. I completely forgot that. I assume we celebrated that last year.
Yeah, I think
long,
so. Yeah,
however
I think
long
so.
We've been doing this. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Great. Well, thanks. I'm glad you reminded me of that. Yeah, so today we're talking about Star Trek Enterprise, Season 3, Episode 20, called The Forgotten. So if you're just tuning in to this for the first time, we are starting at the beginning of the official chronology. So Star Trek Enterprise is at the beginning, and we've been working through it, and we're almost done with Season 3, and we're going episode by episode. And it's been a lot of fun. And so with this episode, the Enterprise has been trying to stop a group of aliens called the Zindi from creating a weapon that destroys Earth. They have made a deal with one of the Zindi named Degra, and they rendezvoused with Degra, and the Enterprise got beat up pretty bad last episode. Lots of hull breaches, lots of issues going on with the Enterprise. They're literally venting. What are they venting, Jason?
I think it was plasma.
Plasma, right. And it's venting so bad, it literally like combusted, and it's going to blow up the ship. Like it's... they have like minutes until the entire ship blows up. Degra is on the ship with them when this issue occurs, and Tucker and Reed go out to the hull of the ship and they're trying to repair it. It's super hot. Reed passes out from heat exhaustion. They are able to fix it. The episode is interesting because Degra is the one who designed the weapon. There was a miniature version of it that the Zindi had sent to Earth and killed 7 million people. That was like the mini-me version of it, but there's a bigger one that they're building that's going to destroy Earth. But as part of that first incident, Tucker's sister was one of the 7 million people who were killed. So there's this interesting dynamic because this whole season they were planning on, you know, going to war with the Zindi, at a minimum destroying the weapon. But then Captain Archer, through a series of events, struck up a deal with Degra. And so now it's like this horrible guy who made this horrible weapon is on board, and Tucker is confronted with him, and he goes through a whole slew of emotions. And it's kind of, they use one of Tucker's crewmen as a way of like walking Tucker through his own sort of emotional journey. So when they were attacked last episode by some Zindi ships, or maybe it's two episodes by some Zindi ships, one of his crewmen was killed in that attack. That's why this episode's called The Forgotten, because the episode starts with Captain Archer remembering the 18 crew members who died last time. So I guess it was last episode, right?
It was, yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, Tucker's tasked with sending a message to this crewman's family, and he's having a hard time with it. He keeps kind of putting it off. And basically what's going on is that Tucker is, I guess he didn't really deal with his sister's loss appropriately. And he sees a lot of his sister in this crewman. What was her name? Do you remember? Was it Taylor?
The crewman? Yeah. The crewman, Janet Taylor.
Janet Taylor. He sees a lot of his sister in her. And every time he tries to talk about Taylor, he just thinks about his sister. And, you know, at first he's angry at Degra. And finally, you know, he talks to T'Pol about this and kind of breaks down. And I think he finally experiences like the true grief of losing his sister. And I think that gives him, you know, some closure. And then he's able to record the message for Taylor's family. So that was like the bulk of the episode. You know, there was other parts where with Degra, the reason why Degra is on the ship, I mean, yes, he did strike up a deal with Captain Archer, and yes, he did agree to rendezvous with him, but Archer's trying to prove to Degra, because this agreement, this ceasefire, or this what would you call it, them like basically laying down arms is based on this idea that Archer's saying, hey, you know, the reason why we need to come together is we're going to come together and we're going to fight a war with these sphere builders, because these sphere builders are like from a different dimension. They're trying to like infiltrate our dimension, which will destroy our universe in the process, make it uninhabitable for us. So, and Archer's trying to prove that that's true, because his evidence is based on something, a piece of evidence from 400 years in the future. So he's showing Degra all this like evidence they've gathered, showing Degra some Zindi that they had defeated in the past, who were trying to build a bioweapon.
From the episode called Carpenter Street.
Right, exactly. So.
And then they also brought back part of the bioweapon from the same episode.
Yes. So they're able to kind of increasingly persuade Degra that, yes, you were misled by these sphere builders to attack Earth. Not only that, we need to come together to go after these sphere builders, because they are going to take over our dimension. And Degra is convinced, but then as he's on the ship getting all this evidence from Archer, that's when these other events occur. So and then at the end, a reptilian ship shows up. So the reptilians are one of the Zindi, and they are now like completely at odds with Degra, and they have a massive warship. They attack the Enterprise. So when Degra leaves the Enterprise, because Degra is like an engineer and he knows this reptilian ship, he's able to disable the reptilian ship, and then actually completely destroys it, because he knows like if they were let him go, the reptilians would have revealed this this deal that they've struck up, and it would compromise the whole thing. So so their pact is sealed at that point, and Degra is suggesting that Archer meets with the whole Zindi council, and that's where the episode ends. So Jason, do you think that Tucker's emotional arc follows the Kubler-Ross stages of grief? Do you think it intentionally followed that? Because I was looking at it.
Yeah, I think so.
And I feel like, yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know about denial. I feel like you could slot that in.
He was definitely in denial. When you throw yourself, when he was throwing himself into work, you know, he, you know, they made it a, I mean, they really drill it home. Like, you know, he hadn't slept in 2 days and he was taking everything. You know, the ship is going to, is, you know, being held on, you know, by duct tape and silly string. And I'm doing the best I can to fix it. And I think he was just trying to lose himself in his work. And I definitely do believe that that was a little bit of denial. That was absolutely denial and avoidance of the issue. Then, anger. And then, you know, anger, the lashing out.
Because he confronts Degra in an angry way.
He does. And then he openly disagrees with the captain. And I thought it was an interesting other perspective in the first scene where he's like, Cap, you know, I don't, you know, this is, can we trust him and all that kind of stuff. And then it evolves or devolves, I guess, into more of a lashing out, you know, his emotions taking it away from what the captain is trying to do by gaining Degra's trust and bridging peace so they can... Because Degra and Captain Archer are both trying to save their respective species, the Zindi, and then humans, obviously. So,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then depression... Obviously, when he breaks down crying with T'Pol, and then finally, finally acceptance when he basically has the fortitude to move on and actually record the message.
Yeah, and it was really beautifully done. You know, because as he was doing the log, at the end, you know, he says goodbye to his sister, and so. As I was watching it, I did not see that coming. Did you?
No. No way.
I was like, why is he so obsessed with this one crewman and trying to avoid the entire log and, you know, not remembering? And then, you know, in that dream sequence, right? Where she comes to him in his dreams. I'm like, what are they doing here? Something more? Was there a closeness, like a mentor-mentee kind of relationship or something of that nature? And it sort of was, but at the same time, it was more... it absolutely losing a friend, but also equating it with the loss of his sister.
Right. She was like an avatar for his...
yeah, exactly.
Getting through the loss of his sister, which... So honestly, I had never considered that Tucker hadn't fully gone through those stages. It was sort of suspended because this is a long time. At this point, it's a long time after his sister was killed. And so I definitely did not see that coming, but I thought it was very well done. And I thought, Trinier? Is
that his name?
Yep. I thought he did a great job. I thought some quality acting, and I think they did a real service to the character, because this season started and he was just basically belligerent, like out for blood, and he was always like a bit of a loose cannon, and I think he's like maturing, but also just he's just kind of like growing up, I guess. I thought they did a great job with the character.
This was definitely a growing up moment for the character, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and we forgot that, you know, Phlox had to, you know, give him a medical order to go take a nap. I mean, so much so that he didn't, you know, that he wanted to continue to lose himself in the work.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the episode did a great job of conveying the like tension and the exhaustion that the crew was experiencing trying to repair these multiple hull breaches all across the Enterprise, and everything is going wrong. As you said, holding things together with shoestring, and so yeah. So what'd you think of the episode? I thought it was one of the better ones.
It was. I totally agree with you. I think there were many aspects, and I hope... So there were a lot of aspects that I hope that we get to cover more. I wanted to ask you about T'Pol's... the consequences of her addiction to Trillium D, you know, even in the small doses, you know, with those emotions. Because they finally... They alluded to it last episode, but now they're really, you know, now Phlox saying, okay, you were on it for 3 months. You know, your ability to control these emotions may not be, you know, may not ever be the same. And that, I was like, wow, that hits at home pretty hard, because it's kind of like, you know, i.e. a smoker, you know, who doesn't think of the long-term consequences, or insert whatever, you know, addiction that someone might be facing, you know, long-term consequences, and they don't think about it.
Yeah.
And so I hope that we continue to explore that as well.
Mm-hmm. The smoker being like lung damage and emphysema
and stuff like that.
I thought that was interesting too, because T'Pol's character also gets moved forward, you could say, but hers is not, hers is like not organic or something. It's forced via this drug damaging her nervous system.
So I thought that
was interesting, because there's been, throughout this show, there's been the idea of like Vulcan emotions and like embracing them versus suppressing them. What are the risks of embracing them? What are the, you know, what are the benefits of suppressing them? And there's been a lot of that. And a lot of times it's felt like a fork in the road for her as a Vulcan. Do I follow the hardcore school of thought that would be preached by, like, the High Council? What's the Vulcan leadership called?
No. Yeah, no. The Vulcan High Council. Yeah. The High Command. The High Command.
Do I follow that strict school of thought, or do I follow this other school of thought, which is the Vulcans without logic? You know, and there's been multiple times when it feels like she has to choose between being acting more human or acting more Vulcan. But here now we're at a point where she's like probably going to be physically unable to be that anymore. She's going to be more human now.
Yeah. Maybe. And,
I could see, you know, this could be a beautiful thing for her, or she could lose her control at the wrong moment.
And, you know, it's interesting to me, and I hope that we continue to explore this, because they've done it before. The monastery listening station, the off, like...
Pajam.
Pajam, thank you. The underhandedness of Vulcan society, and all the, you know, there's actually been some corruption. And I have found that incredibly fascinating in the last seasons that we've encountered that. And it's really, for me, kind of, I've had to strip down what I thought of Vulcans in general, and now we're getting this whole other thing, this whole new lens towards the Vulcans in this time period, and it's incredibly, as Mr. Spock would say, very fascinating.
Yeah, for sure. I think it opens up a lot for the
character. It does. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I think it could open up corruption in government, you know, terrorist cells. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, violent Vulcans. I mean, we've seen the ones that did not follow Vulcan society, you know, the ones that follow their emotions in that one episode in season two.
Yeah, with the mind melding.
Yeah, exactly. So,
And I feel a little bit better about last episode, I said I thought it was kind of a cheap way to, like, button up the Tucker T'Pol romance. it was just a product of her exploring her emotions.
Yeah.
But actually now I like it. Like, I feel like, I guess I wouldn't have liked it if it was just a one-off, but now it is like a solid part of her arc.
Yeah.
I actually do like it. Yeah.
I think this is just the beginning of a friendship and then maybe something more. I mean, I know we've got just a few more episodes to this season, and then season 4, I mean, that's the last season, so, you know, we'll see what happens. But yeah, there's, yeah.
Did you notice any interesting cameos?
Peter Griffin?
Yeah.
Stewie Griffin? Brian Griffin?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The captain of the Orville, which I hear is a really good show.
I've heard good things. I'm not surprised he made his way onto this show. I feel like he's a big Trekkie, so...
I was a little disappointed, though, because he would, like, he got yelled at by Tucker and then had, like, 2 lines.
Yeah. I definitely paused it, though. I was like, is that Seth MacFarlane? I had to Google it while I was watching it. And I was like, holy cow, it's him.
Yeah.
I was like, are we watching an episode of the Orville?
right, exactly. And then I was like, oh, even then he's a little... You know, Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah, for sure.
Ensign, I don't know what his name is, but I'm sure it was Ensign something.
It was Ensign Rivers.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know. I like the episode a lot.
So, I want to mention... This has thrown me a little bit. Because this is not what Star Trek usually does. I mean, sometimes it does now. In many iterations of it now. But... I know this is weird to say, but... It's amazing how many... Like, callbacks, throwbacks...
Mm-hmm.
To previous episodes,
right,
or is in the show, you know, the dead Zindi reptilians and the little bit, the trace of the bioweapon that they were creating from Carpenter Street,
right.
The DNA genetic analysis of the dead sphere builder that they showed on the medical screen from. I think the episode was called Harbinger. The sphere builder that was degrading.
Yeah.
And he was like, return me to
the canary in the coal mine?
Yeah, the canary in the coal mine. Yeah. I think that was from Harbinger. And then the analysis of the sphere that they were able to penetrate and, like, you know, do a sensor analysis of, that goes back to... I don't know what episode. The one of the final pieces that Archer uses.
The one with
uses,
the Marauders.
Yeah. The one, and so the one of the last pieces that Archer uses to convince Degra that, hey, you've been duped.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I agree. I mean, this whole season feels like one consistent arc, but this one in particular, yeah, had all these callbacks.
Yeah.
And with a very episodic show, I don't know if you could have watched this episode and had any idea what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And that surprises me a little bit about, I'm like, that's not how Star Trek usually is, but I guess this is like a longer story arc that, you know, you do have to lay out the groundwork and then build.
Yep.
And then, so there was a, and then the, in the, when, Trip and, Reed are trying to put out the fire outside the ship.
Yeah.
I was amazed that the hull plates were just held down by two buttons.
Little buttons. I had the same thought. I mean,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's. I thought that was strange. It doesn't seem secure enough, right? Don't you think they'd be bolted down?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I'm curious to know, how are they going to repair all these hole breaches? They're going to need a lot of material because there's like physical gaping holes all across the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to need a lot of metal to fix it all.
Yeah. I think... They do this a lot in this series, but... I don't think we're going to get to the Zindi Council episode next episode. I think there might be, you know, when Dagger at the end says you have to go through this nebula and to take the shortcut and there's aliens in there that are going to be, you know, you better make your way through. They're kind of hostile. That to me in my mind, like, is a perfect setup for a, not gonna get there yet, and they're gonna run into something. But then I think, and my point is, when we do get to the Zindi Council, I think there is an agreement, and I think the Zindi will help. I think the Zindi lend them even more technology to help repair the Enterprise, if you will.
That's the most logical thing.
It's a guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's the most logical conclusion there, for sure.
Do you think we're going to get a new species of aliens, or do you think it's going to be like, you know, some lost Klingons or Romulans or Vulcans or whatever?
I don't know. It's weird because the dimension they're going to use to travel to the Zindi Council, is that the same dimension that the sphere builders live in?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know if it's a dimension or just a pocket of space and a nebula that gives them a shortcut. I don't know. I don't remember what Dagra said, actually.
I just think it seems like we've had multiple iterations of this, of aliens who live in some pocket dimension.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I've kind of lost track of if we've always talked about the same ones and now we just have a clearer picture of it.
Right. I'm wondering if it could be like Suliban, maybe? I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
Didn't you say that there was, from another series, there was
a group who lives in another dimension? Man, the Hirogen and the Hirogen and the Undine, or species 868472. Oh, you think it's Borg?
Dude, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, what series was that? Oh, that's TNG, right?
Borg is TNG, and then Voyager, and then Undine, or species 8672. Oh, crap. Excuse me. I think it's 8. Star Trek fans, remind me again. 8672? 8472? 8472. Or the Undine. And then a couple other species. Could be. I don't know.
What is that from?
Voyager.
The Undine? Voyager, okay.
Because we've seen Borg, so I don't know. Or it could just be a whole new species of aliens.
I hope it's the one you're talking about. I think that'd be a cool callback.
It could be. Like, yeah, it would be. It would be.
Yeah, but I think you're absolutely right. There's no way they get through that corridor without getting into some kind of conflict with whatever that alien group is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so I think the next episode, the next time we convene, you know, we'll, I, yeah. Unless they want to wrap this up and move us on, I just don't see that happening.
Me neither. And I just can't envision how this meeting is going to go without Archer and the whole Enterprise being in just really mortal danger. Like, how are they going to just waltz into this sure. council?
Yep.
Even with Degra on their side, even with the Primate on their side, I just don't see how it's going to work. So I'm just curious to know how
did you catch that? Yeah. So to kind of piggyback off of that, did you catch that Dagger has said that it's the aquatics that they're the most enigmatic and going to be, could be the most challenging to convince over the reptilians? I was like, wow.
Yeah. Cause you would think it'd be the insectoids or the reptilians.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because we have not heard too much from the aquatics, but I'm like, whoa, that was...
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
I thought that was strange. Curious to see what happens there.
Yeah. So, this might be in my mind, but they equated the... I think it was Tucker who equated the Zindi weapon to, he said it would take 1,000 starships to generate that much firepower. Is that a direct or similar quote to what?
Well, because
Han Solo said in A New Hope.
Yeah, man. Because Tucker says it would take 1,000 Enterprises to do that.
Yeah.
Han Solo says it would take 1,000 Star Destroyers with more firepower than you and I have ever seen.
Okay.
I think he gets cut. It doesn't get cut off. More firepower than you and I have ever seen. And I think
yeah,
he trails off.
I think
off
he does or... say that. Yeah. So I was like, oh, a little, you know, maybe reminiscent of a Star Wars reference there.
Little on the nose, maybe just admitting that, you know, this whole Death Star thing is a nod to Star Wars, if nothing else. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm curious. I can't wait to watch the next episode.
Yep. I must say these last three episodes have been really good.
Agreed.
Last two or three, yep.
It's kind of made the wait worth it.
Yep. And obviously you have to give it up to the writing on this, for this episode, but also the man behind the camera in this episode, Geordi LaForge.
Yeah, LeVar Burton.
LeVar Burton himself.
Everyone he directs, every episode he directs is fantastic, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think he gets, I mean, he gets it, right? He gets the Star Trek thing.
Yeah, a little bit.
And one more reminiscent thing. I just wanted to say that in the teaser, the Archer speech that he's giving to the crew about the 18, that to me was very, very reminiscent of Captain Kirk's speech to the Enterprise crew during Star Trek the Motion Picture. It wasn't the same, but it was very reminiscent of it. And
all right, I'll just have to take your word for it, because
he says, well, you don't have to take my word for it. Reading Rainbow reference for all y'all. One of my favorite shows growing up.
Nice. Well, man, this might be a shorter episode.
Yeah, nope, I think we hit it.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about with this one?
No, I think we covered everything.
Cool.
Just because it's a short podcast episode, it doesn't mean that it wasn't a really, really well done episode in general.
Yeah, agreed.
Just a little bit more on the, like, the less of the action Star Trek and more of the, you know, Star Trekiness of the franchise.
Absolutely. And once Andor comes out in 2 weeks, you and I will never shut up. So we'll just conserve our energy for now and then.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
These podcast episodes will be 3 hours long. So.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thank you as always. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And yep. Everyone, thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe on Spotify. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And we really appreciate you listening.